No sooner does God say to the Israelites, Lo ta'aselecha pesel, don't make yourself any graven images or statues, when, of course, as we know, they turn around and they make the golden calf. And those of you who were here earlier heard that the Kotzker Rebbe said that the reason that was a forgivable sin is that at least making the golden calf has a nitzotz, a spark of spirituality about it. They wanted to worship. So even though the impulse to worship was perverted into an unacceptable, a sinful direction, at least they wanted to worship. But I want to suggest that in addition there was another impulse, an equally dangerous and wonderful impulse behind the making of the golden calf that isn't really about worship, but is about beauty. The Israelites are wandering through the desert. They see the beauty in its starkness of the desert landscape and the natural world. They've just come from Egypt. And Egypt is filled with the beauty of created things. Ancient Egyptian art, however stylized, is beautiful. It reproduces the natural world. Modern ornithologists, people who study birds, can still tell what birds the ancient Egyptians were painting because of the excruciating detail in ancient Egyptian art. And the Israelites missed humanly created beauty. They wanted to make something. They had the universal urge to bring something out of themselves to admire. Now, beauty is a dangerous thing. Matthew Arnold, the critic and philosopher of 19th century England, wrote in his essay on Hebraism and Hellenism that the Greeks worshipped the holiness of beauty and the Jews worshipped the beauty of holiness. It's a great phrase. Like all such phrases, it's too simple, but there is much in it. But even the Greeks recognized the danger of beauty. Plato, in his Ideal Republic, doesn't let in any sculptors, any painters, any poets. They're dangerous. Keep them out. Because the arts, he said, inflame people's passions. And passions are very bad if you're a philosopher and you're trying to make a reasonable society. You don't want people to feel too much because you never know what's going to happen. But of course, no society that ever existed, listen to Plato. Every society has had artists, creators, sculptors, painters, poets, musicians, creators of beauty. Beauty has power. Images have power. We may not think that we are idolaters today, and we may not think that images grab us the way they did our ancestors. But let me suggest to you an experiment suggested by the great art historian Gombrich. He said, if you don't believe that images have power, then take a picture of someone you love, take a pin, and poke the eyes out. Exactly. He said, nobody wants to do that. Because there's something in an image that grabs us, that is powerful, that speaks to our souls. We respond to the creation of images. And that's why idolatry was a threat. But we also respond to beauty. And that's why the creation of beauty is a blessing. Our greatest leaders, Moses, David, they were poets. They created beauty. If you look at ancient synagogues, Even though people are always surprised when they go to Israel and look at the excavations of ancient synagogues, there are mosaics on the floor with pictures. We want to bring beauty into the world. The creation of the world in the Bible is told in under 40 verses. But the creation of the tabernacle takes hundreds of verses. Because human beings have to be meticulous and careful and deliberate and caring in their creation of things, and creating beauty and doing it properly is more difficult for a person than it is for God to make a whole world. It's true that Judaism isn't usually thought of as a religion of art, but let me read you the words of Marc Chagall. Jews, if they have a feeling for it, and I happen to, may weep at the passing of the decorators of ancient synagogues and wooden synagogues all over the world. But what is the difference between my crippled great-grandfather Segal, who decorated the Mohilev Synagogue, and me, who painted murals in the Jewish theater? I'm sure if I let my beard grow, you would see his exact likeness. Because if I were not a Jew, I wouldn't be an artist at all. The creation of beauty is something that our tradition promotes. Hidur mitzvah, you are supposed to beautify the mitzvah. Sure, it's nice to have a menorah, a chanukiah, but it's nicer to have a beautiful chanukiah. It's nice to have a little shul, but it's nicer to have one where there's a little carving in the corner, where the Aron Kodesh is decorated, where we respond with the best of ourselves to the beauty that human beings can create. And in fact, the very commandment against making images hints at this. Because we are told, Lo ta'aseh, you shall not make, lecha pesel, to you a statue or an engraving. In our Torah reading this morning, we see God tells Moses, Pesal lecha, an engraving, make you, when he makes the Ten Commandments. Now, what's the difference between lecha pesel, don't make to you an engraving, and pesal lecha, an engraving to you? As a Hasidic master pointed out, it all depends where the you is put. If you put yourself first, lecha pesel, you're making an engraving. So in other words, you're creating something just to bring glory to your ego and to your vanity and to your name. That's idolatry. But, pesal lecha, if you're making something in the world and you're putting yourself behind it because what you want is to enhance the beauty and the wonder of God's creation, that's the Ten Commandments. After all, we are the ones who are told you should be in every way you can in the footsteps of God. As God is merciful, we should be merciful. As God is caring, we should be caring. But God is called in our tradition Sayar, an artist, which means we too should bring beauty into the world. That is part of our task and part of our joy. Daniel Boorstin, who was for a long time the Librarian of Congress, wrote a book called The Creators, and in it he tries to figure out why did science and technology arise in the Western world. And his answer is because Judaism gave the world the idea of a creator God, of a God who deliberately set out. In fact, the rabbis say God used the Torah as a blueprint to make a world according to a design. And so he said, he gave this image, gave to human beings the idea that we too should be creators. We too should take of the raw material of the world and make works of art. All of this is contained in what happens in next week's Parsha. Because in next week's Parsha, we are introduced to someone who could do something that Moses couldn't. Moses could lead the people. Moses could have a face-to-face relationship with God, but Moses couldn't build the tabernacle. Why? Because the tabernacle had to be a work of art. And so God calls on Bezalel ben Uri, the paradigmatic, the first, the greatest of Jewish artists, to build the tabernacle. In other words, there is, at the very heart of our tradition, in our most sacred possession ever, in the very box that held the Ten Commandments, there is a place for the artist to create. When we have a sculpture garden, as we do outside, or we have our walls lined with paintings, as we do, what we are doing is continuing the tradition that is begun in the Torah reading of next week, saying that sanctity itself should be encased in beauty. That when you worship, you should worship in a place where you can feel elevated. That art is the expression of what is best in us, as long as we appreciate it and venerate it and don't worship it. As long as we know that every beauty created by human beings should lead us beyond humanly created beauty to the beauty in the world and the beauty of God. The same gold that the people in this week's Parsha, the Israelites, used to make the golden calf, is next week used to make the tabernacle. And let's see that as a metaphor. The same impulses that lead us to aggrandize ourselves, to make too much of ourselves, can be used and harnessed to enable us to create something greater than ourselves. Every sanctuary, everything that makes us feel that there is something greater, is an opportunity to appreciate the collaboration between the human impulse to create beauty and the divine impulse to reach down and exist in our world. We talk all the time about the example of Moses, and the example of David, and the example of Deborah and Ruth, of all of our leaders, women and men throughout history. But let's not forget Bezalel. Let's not forget those who lead us in art, in beauty, in the appreciation of God's world. It is true what Matthew Arnold said, that the first mission of the Jewish people in this world has been to bring holiness, the sense of God, the sense of unity, the sense of goodness to all the nations of the world. But that doesn't mean that there is only one way to do it. And you can bring holiness through beauty, as Bezalel does with the Mishkan. So in all of our lives, I hope that we can appreciate and also help create beautiful things, and realize that in appreciating beauty, we are not only touching something very deep inside human nature, but something grand inside God's world. Not ta'aseh lecha pesel, not worship the product of human hands, but p'sal lecha luchot, but engrave something that is greater than us, that transcends us, that fills God's world, not only with holiness, with goodness, and with kindness, but with beauty and with love. Shabbat Shalom.